Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's grown to hate you. And she's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
Welcome to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM. I'm Mike Sleva along with the good Dr. Guy McPherson. This September 22nd, 2015 edition, episode 56 of Nature Bats Last comes live to you from a few locations. Our thanks to Afrozin for his theme song contribution, and you can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com. Our guest this week is Janae O'Donnellson from Peak Moment TV. And today we'll be taking calls for our guest at 888-874-4888. Janae O'Donnellson is host and producer of Peak Moment TV, a biweekly online video series about locally reliant living for challenging times. She and her videographer partner Robin were already concerned about climate chaos and human population pressures on the planet when peak oil hit their radar in 2005. Since starting Peak Moment TV in 2006, they have toured the West Coast five times, recording shows between Santa Barbara and Vancouver, British Columbia. Their nearly 300 programs highlight constructive responses like local food and investing, permaculture, natural building, the sharing economy, intentional community, and simple living. Janae first read Guy McPherson's work in 2012 and subsequently hosted him twice on Peak Moment TV. Robin and Janae have lived off-grid for 25 years in the Sierra Nevada foothills, on 160 forested acres, which they have protected with conservation easements. They live and work in a motorhome and intend to record programs across North America. And you can find more Peak Moment shows and Janae's blog on the web at peakmoment.tv. Welcome to Nature Bats Last in the Progressive Radio Network, Janae O'Donnellson.
Thanks, Mike. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, we're glad to have you. Your show, Peak Moment TV, is what I would consider to be a cornerstone for those of us concerned about energy and climate and extinction and all things connecting those areas. And I was wondering if you could kind of take us through the creation of the show.
Sure. When peak oil hit my radar in 2005, it was already it followed having read McKibben's The End of Nature back in 89. And I thought, maybe peak oil and reading Kunstler's The Last Emergency, The Long Emergency, I thought maybe peak oil will be the thing that will hit people's wallets and wake them up that can lead us to dealing with climate change. Because that was the longer and deeper concern that I've had. So in that 2005, The End of Suburbia came out as well, and our community organized a think tank and began to create a what was then called a relocalization group, what would now be called a transition group. People wanted to transition more gently through the collapse of industrial civilization. So Robin and I had been doing video in our community for a few years and said, this is a natural thing to put on our local community access TV station. Just as a side, this is pre-YouTube. So our main way of getting videos out was just our local community access station. So we started in January of 06 and quickly had shows on both local food growing, because that's my A number one concern is how do we eat,
Right.
And soon after had folks talking about climate change. That's 9 years ago, 9.5 years ago. Trying to actually, one of our guests who was with the U.S. Forest Service was already telling people about the droughts that would be coming to California, the increase in wildfires, and of course, we are now living through that.
Right.
We got the chance to do some traveling and climb in summer of 06 and climbed into our little VW van again and went along the West Coast, and we taped shows in the field with people all the way from Vashon Island and Vancouver, B.C., down in Central California. And I quickly learned one thing. The folks that I had contacted were part of the relocalization network, so they were sort of on board with the energy descent picture.
Right.
But we learned about many people in the communities who we hadn't met before who were simply doing the right thing towards a smaller footprint and local food and permaculture. So whether or not people were consciously doing this as a response to peak oil didn't matter. And I feel the same now, that many people are responding to the climate change and peak oil and peak resources and all without necessarily framing it that way.
Right.
That's a good point, Janaea. This is Guy, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, Guy. Glad to be with you.
And I had a similar experience. I discovered peak oil in 2004 when I was writing my first book-length work of social criticism, and I realized this is what's going to allow extend our run as a species and force us to live differently than we've been living up to that point. Well, that was a long time ago, and peak oil was a hot topic that has largely faded away. Is it no longer a significant issue for you? Why has it faded away, and has the decline of civilization that goes along with it, why has that faded from public discussion as well, do you suppose?
I think that peak oil didn't play out the way peak oilers thought. I think it's far more involved with economics and prices and whether there's money in there for the oil companies to even go continue any exploitation. So I think that it's going to peak, and then we're all, in the long emergency. That scenario hasn't played out. It's still present, but I think that it's more of a bumpy short step down than a collapse, a cliff. I think, though, that what I'm noticing, Guy, in the last couple of years is people are more okay with bringing up the topic of climate change. They're not very comfortable with going very far into it, and certainly it's a rare person that would even entertain hearing the possibility of human extinction. But certainly it's on people's minds because of all of the effects happening all over the planet.
So when did climate change really become something in the forefront of your own mind?
You know, Mike, I'll give you the background and then we'll go to the forefront. I actually thought about climate change when I read, in the 1960s, I read the book of Edgar Cayce's readings on Earth changes, one of which he foresaw. He was a clairvoyant. And what he foresaw was a time when the state of California would basically be underwater, except for the mountain ranges.
Right.
And I thought, what would cause this? So I did some research and actually wrote an article for a magazine on it, and noted when I was writing, this was late 70s, noted that we already in the 70s were at the warmest decade in record. So that might be the early precursor, but it really hit the radar in 89 when Robin and I read McKibben's End of Nature, and it just rang true. And got deepened in the early 2000s when we read Lovelock's The Revenge of Gaia, because I respected his position as an independent scientist. I didn't like his conclusion that we should go to nuclear power, but I appreciated his attempt to be an independent scientist, which actually, Guy, was a piece of why I listened carefully to you. You came on my radar, Guy, through Carolyn Baker's telling truth to Ella. I've lost. I only read it every day, her digest. and she linked to you, and that you are also an independent scientist now, speaks to me that you aren't beholden to whoever may be paying you. So the most recent peak at climate change really was what, 2011 or 2012, when I read your work.
So, as you indicated, you've read a lot and you've traveled around a bit here and there. What about your own observations? Have they indicated that climate change is underway? Do you see anything indicating the presence of abrupt climate change?
My dear, I am living in the middle of a California drought and see it quite close to home. Our own well is at a much lower level, and the flow is restricted because of our wet four-year drought. The pines, the cedars around us are dying prematurely, the needles. So I've got it up close and personal right here in land that I love at home. But I'm also reading more, and there are more voices coming out who are citing the observations, be it the glacial melt, the Arctic, the methane in Siberia, what's happening in Alaska where Robin's family lives. What my observation is, I don't dwell on everything that comes out, nor do I remember all the details. But what it feels to me like is the symptoms, if you will, are coming faster, they're hitting harder, they're sooner than anyone, sooner than the mainstream, even scientists thought they might. And I see that even efforts on the net to get people to consider the upcoming climate talks in Paris to be the last great chance, though you would probably say it's too late, actually. But it feels like the heat is on, and that's both literally and and of course figuratively, in the conversation.
Yeah. So I mean, that being said, what life choices are you making, or you see others making, both inner and outer?
Ah, that's the real question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that I should add that from my own perspective, I don't hold a position that human extinction in the near term is inevitable. I think there's much we don't know. And that's maybe because I prefer the more positive side of that stance.
Sure.
But I consider it highly possible. The time frame is the only question for me. I mean, we always knew that humans would go extinct at some point when the sun died.
Right.
Oh, probably. But for us, personally, Robin and I, having harder times with the smoke in the air. We live right beside a river canyon that could easily go up in flames and engulf everything. When we traveled a year and a half ago in southwestern Canada, we found the people to be far more open and friendly, and found ourselves drawn to relocate, thinking seriously of relocating in that area, partly because usually there's more rain and water, which there hasn't been this season. It's also Robin's home territory. She was raised in the Puget Sound area. So for us, we're thinking about relocating. That's sort of on the outside. And interestingly, without our prompting, the tenant who has been renting our off-grid house came to us in December and asked if he might buy that property. So it feels to us like the kindness of the universe is opening doors, and allowing, making that possible.
Right.
So,
wow.
Pardon?
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, when that even goosebump time, it's like. So, I think that that's one answer on us personally. For the inside, I think that I find myself reading a little bit about what's going on around the planet in terms of the warming or the changing of the cycles in the ocean, the saline cycles, the meth. I read about that a few times a week, but I don't dwell in it. I don't swim in it. Mm. I think when I really feel it, it's just too hard for my heart.
Yeah.
To just, if I were always living in that possibility. So what I do is keep an eye on it, and I respect that Robin, who already sees this is happening, doesn't need all the details, doesn't need the up-to-date everyday news. I respect that.
Yeah.
And so I don't share it with her unless it's really something quite dramatic. And this may surprise you, but I don't tend to talk about it a great deal with friends or family. You know, I share it. It's there. They can consider it. But I'm not going to beat anybody, you know, bludgeon anybody with this. Because I think right. that along the lines of, Guy, your suggestion that what you've done is to lead a life of excellence, I think my equivalent is something that a friend just wrote actually today. He said, throw your hearts forward out there. Throw your heart forward and then go chase it.
I like that.
And I think I felt like we were called to do Peak Moment TV. And I have been so blessed to meet so many inspiring and good people doing good things. There are far more of those folks in the woodwork doing the right things for their community and for the land and for the earth than we have a clue. They're just quietly, busily doing that work. So I feel like having a meaningful contribution matters a lot to me, and I feel grateful to have Peak Moment as a venue for that. And very grateful to have folks, you know, come back and give comments that it's changed their life. That's
right.
That's my life of excellence, I guess, Guy.
Of course, that's wonderful. And you brought up the personal side, so I'm going to go down that track a little bit. Occasionally,
sure.
Your message, your show, must affect personal relationships. Without naming names, will you describe some of those interactions, good and bad, that result from the kinds of information you present on Peak Moment?
I think that there certainly are. Let me make sure I understand your question. People whose relationships have been affected by what we share in Peak Moment?
Yes, including
right?
your own. Your own relationships
oh.
with family and friends.
Oh.
And I mean, certainly my life has been significantly altered as a result of the choices I've made and other people's
yes.
responses
yes.
to those choices.
Yes. Actually, I think, Guy, that I don't have the temperament to... I learned early on in doing Peak Moment that I don't have the temperament to do most of our shows about what needs to be changed in our world, about what's wrong and what we need to fight against. I follow a lot of that, and I respect that, but I don't have the kind of personality that can live with that. So most of our shows and the people we meet are doing something that I would consider constructive or wise to do as we have fewer resources and more climate challenges. So in the relationship with Robin, I think that who we have met and where we've gotten to visit has deepened. You know, we're like a I mean, we're a real close team. And I think satisfies for both of us a sense of we're giving back in thanks for this life.
Right.
Most of the people that I meet, I'm thinking of a couple that we know in outside of Victoria, for whom they're building of a net zero house and now gardens that are on a, they live on a rock, that are already planting things for the climate changes that are already in the cooked into the works, as you would say, baked in. I find that this kind of thing tends to both bring people closer and cause a little more friction. Because the two partners may not be on the same wavelength relative to timing or the effect or how potent it will be, yet they are, you know, I see them and others working towards doing something that they can do and care about.
Right.
For my family, it's basically, my mom is 93, and I get that my, you know, my sister, they're just in the middle of living their lives.
Right.
But I have brought it up to, Robert and I are goddess aunties to three wonderful children who are now all adults. And we've shared our pain and concern for their futures with them.
Yeah.
And what I see them doing, I mean, one is going to be a doctor and is already helping people on Native American reservations. And the other, another is one, is already doing peer counseling for disadvantaged young people. So I see that they are already bringing their gifts to the world.
Right.
Now, those are, I mean, those are shining examples. I'm not sure I answered your question, really.
No, I think you, I thought, go ahead.
Yeah, you danced around it nicely, so that's as good.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I think, thanks, guys. What I'll say is this. I am not coming, bringing, I'm not in the, you have taken on the hard job of being a messenger of news that looks to most people like horrible doom and gloom. Most of the Peak Moment shows are about possibilities and intended to inspire people. And frankly, if the scenario that you're showing is coming true, Peak Moment is about shorter term responses. So my family hasn't, you know, refuse to talk to me because by our giving shows that are more about what might you do, how might you respond,
right,
in some constructive way, it doesn't have that same shadow over it,
right,
that your message is to. That's a little more direct.
You're listening to Nature Bats Last in the Progressive Radio Network, and we are speaking with Janaea Donaldson, host of Peak Moment Television. And I, you know, this conversation we're having, it's a fine balance. It really is a fine balance between family and friends and your what you can take on the inside. And I think I find myself actually reacting to this news and dealing with this news in a very similar way, the way you are actually, Janaea.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, there's certain things I can do and certain things I cannot do. And then you make choices based off those ideas and thoughts. And, but yeah, it's kind of this razor's edge that, it's easy to slip to, you know, quote unquote, some dark spaces in your life if you're not careful, because this can be overwhelming.
Yes. And I think that if we can go into those dark places with some mindfulness,
yeah,
I think that's really important to do. After I was reading The Revenge of Gaia, which pretty conclusively, you know, my memory serves, was saying what Gaia is saying. It's like it's curtain spoke. I was in a sort of an underlying state of grief for months. It felt the real to me. And I think that grieving for what we are losing and who we are losing, I think that's part of my picture. I journal. I do watercolors where we travel. I do pictures partly just so that I can feel more connected to whatever bit of nature I am near. And partly as a meditation, a communion, you know, the lovely light on the blackberries or the shadow of dead branches on a pine. I mean, so I think for those folks who have psyches strong enough to let themselves feel,
mm-hmm,
those feelings that are pretty much, as Guy says in every talk, we're a death denying and grief denying, avoiding culture. And for those who are willing to feel and be with it, I think that's a contribution to all of us.
Oh, absolutely.
Sure. You're listening to Nature Bites Last on the Progressive Radio Network. We're interviewing Janaea Donaldson of Peak Moment TV, and we're taking your calls. Give us a holler at 888-874-4888. That's a toll-free call, 888-874-4888. Ask any question of Mike, Janaea, or myself. So for you, Janaea, what are some of the aha moments on Peak Moment? What are the kinds of shows that you're interviewing somebody and you go, oh, I didn't think of that?
That's a kind of hard question. I never thought of it that way. Wow.
Is it because you know everything?
No.
There are no surprises.
Heavens, no. I mean, I learn tons through all of our guests. I always learn something. You know, the kind of aha that changes my worldview. Perhaps less, well, certainly, I have to go back to my conversation with you as the most recent of those. The conversation we had in February of 14, in which you were saying only one, just one thing, the methane coming out of the Arctic could cause the end of it all. It's like, whoa, I didn't have that frame, that's a big aha. I think that, I think that one of the other ahas is that I've had is to realize how much of a difference one single person can make. I think I hadn't really gotten that until in our very first trip, we videoed a show with Judy Alexander of Port Townsend, and the show was about how much food can I grow in my backyard? She had been awakened by the limits to growth in the 1970s. And so her thought was, I have to have food for me and food to share with my neighbors. Ah, I like that. That's an aha. Are we growing enough? Are we doing enough to include our neighbors? Because the whole survivalist mentality feels to me like a selfish dead end and very limited. We've gone on to video other shows in Port Townsend, influenced by Judy and her colleagues. There's a transition type group there with people who are recycling bicycle parts, and they're building bike paths everywhere. And she gave up her car and is sharing with another family. So it's like she's now working on the climate change issues. And then what I realized is one person just doing what follows naturally. It wasn't maybe an aha, and yet it's very profound for me. The most recent show we did with her, and not yet produced, was she and a group of friends, with the guidance of a woman who is a deaf midwife, helped one of the friends who helped bring us there, actually, in his conscious dying. I think we'll see more of that kind of, you know, a community of people to help one another make that passage.
Right.
So, that's not strong on ahas. I'll have to think about that.
I listened to your show, and there's really three people that I like to listen to as far as interviews go, and it's yourself, and it's Tavis Smiley, and it's Bill Moyers, and the three of you I think are really, really good listeners, and it comes out across in your interviews. And I was wondering, really, you know, to really help Guy and I out, what is your preparation for a show with a guest, and you know, how do you go about preparing an interview? And you know, some tips would be nice.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the compliment. And I prepare for shows in different ways. I mean, I'm the one who sets up who do I want to do a show with. If it's generally, I'm helped if someone can give me some guidance about what are the main topics that are hot on their mind, particularly if it's a tour. You know, what are the highest aspects of, you know, we do a little planning just ahead of time. You know, let's go see the chickens, and then we're going to go over to the a house, and I didn't even know you had a root cellar. So we do a little planning ahead of time. For people who are authors or thinkers, my best preparation is to at least read some of what they're about. So I've got more context, and I frankly cannot read all of for every guest. I just can't.
No.
I love summaries. So sometimes I will read and take notes from that. One of the best gifts some authors, Paul and Sarah Edwards, did for me is they provided me a set of questions, sort of like what they think are the hottest topics in their book. So I can at least get that lead rolling. But you know, once we get going, I tend to listen and I want to follow the lead of what's got energy from my guests.
Yeah.
Follow a comment that they've made and ask about it further. That's the listening part, I guess. And I realize go ahead.
No, that's powerful. It's you can feel that power in the interview because it just flows and it's an actual conversation, which makes a large, huge difference, I think.
Yeah, it arises in the moment. I mean, what I find is that for people who are not used to being interviewed, it will take us maybe 10 or 15 minutes for the person to sort of get comfortable, get in it, and sort of lose a little bit of their nervousness and start into the topics that matter to them. And then you can feel they're rolling. And all I get to do is just keep fanning fires, you know, keep rolling because you're on what you care about.
Right.
So for me, it's about, you know, helping to break down the personal walls a little bit ahead of time when I can so that they're comfortable and we get to that sooner.
Occasionally,
I do write lists of topics or questions that I know I really want to cover.
Excellent. As I indicated, we are taking calls, 888-874-4888, and we have Matt from Florida on the line. Go ahead, Matt.
Hello, Guy. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Janaya. I think if you and I got together for a cup of tea, we would hit it off. I think you sound just salt of the earth. Really, how you come across and everything is just so warm and wonderful, and I think the universe is lucky to have you. Thank you. The reluctance to kind of accept the inevitability of Guy's work was clear. You said that, you know, gee, I don't think it's going to happen real soon. And then I realized that the early adopters like Guy and yourself of the off-the-grid lifestyles, that was a heck of a commitment. I really respect what both you and Guy did. And I just wondered if you could wade in a little bit about, you know, if there was any misgivings of like, well, gee, maybe I could have squeezed out another few more years of civilization living before I went off the grid. I wonder if there's any regret for that, et cetera.
Matt, thank you for that, first of all, for your comment and salt of the earth. I appreciate that. And I would love to have a cup of tea with you when we come to Florida. So be sure to email me.
I'm in Boulder now, Janice. Come see me at Janet. I'm coming to Boulder right now. Come visit.
Boulder. All right. I'm not sure when we hit Boulder, but email me so we can stay in touch, because that's part of how I find people and places to stay and get nurtured on the road. When Robin and I get on the road, is finding people like you that we can meet with.
All right. You've got to play Frisbee.
Oh, it's been a few years. It's Janaya at peakmoment.tv. And to answer your question, not only do I have no regrets about going off grid, I feel like it was some of the best training I could have ever had. Being off grid for 25 years taught us, and running our own, you know, we're out in 160 acres. We're taking care of our own water system, our own electrical system. The net is chancy. I learned so many good practical skills for how do we conserve electricity so we don't have to run the generators often for backup battery on many, many, many rain days. Canning, preserving, dehydrating, sewing, creating warm window curtains to insulate the windows. I mean, I feel like every ounce of that training taught me resourcefulness, taught me practicality, and frankly, Ed, I'm hoping some younger people will adopt us at some point so that we can take some of those skills and share them. And work side by side with younger people who want to carry that kind of self-reliance on. So no regrets. I mean, it was expensive because there were no subsidies at that point, and so we learned to live within a budget. We use 10% of the electricity of the average American household. We use something like 2% of the water of the average American household. So I would encourage people to do it now, because I realize if things get as collapse continues, I have this inner, what will I say, reserve, knowing I can live with a lot less and be happy.
Yeah.
Right. That differentiating between needs and wants comes into play when you live off grid.
Mm.
Have you ever had a complete bust of an interview? Have you ever interviewed somebody and said, oh, geez, we can't put that on the air. That was just awful.
Yeah, I have.
I mean, besides me.
Yeah. There were actually three guy interviews, only two men.
guy, frankly, you know what? In Guy, in our first conversation, I realized that for me as a feeling person, I knew there were lots of feelings that you had going on inside. And my only hope was that I could tap it, that I could make it safe enough for you to tap some of those feelings. And you did. It wasn't very long after your retreats and your grief workshop, so you were close to that. And I was that. So you weren't hard at all, my dear, in that race. actually, the shows that are hard for me are either people that I put on a pedestal somewhat, and you are one of those, or Richard Heinberg is one of those people that I really, really esteem. That's, you know, I get a little more nervous. But I have had a few that are a bust, and it was the one that comes to mind was with a young farmer. It was early in 06. It was one of the first shows I'd ever done, and I really hadn't yet sort of developed skills on how to bring this really shy and inarticulate young man out. So we didn't produce that because I couldn't. We didn't find our way. We didn't find. But no, sure. Most shows, very rare, very rare. Because what I find is, by the time I found somebody, they have an interesting story to tell. Just like you and your Frisbees, Matt. I think he's off the phone, but yeah.
You benefit from obviously producing a show, and it's pre-recorded, which we've kind of flip-flopped here on this show. We've been live, and then we've been pre-recorded, and we've been live, and we've been really fortunate. We've only had what I would call a couple really tough ones, and part of that was our fault. I don't think we necessarily read the answers or the guest as well as we possibly could, but. Yeah, I mean, I think if you do enough of these shows, you're just going to run into that.
Yeah, and of course, like you, I pre-select people and subjects that I want, which makes me more engaged. But because we pre-record, you're right, we have a little bit of easier time. You know, it's very rare we edit out something that somebody has said unless it just went a little too long.
Right.
But radio is harder because we don't have the 80% of the information we as humans get from each other is through our faces, through our eyes, our hands, our gestures. And radio have that. It makes it much tougher to really relate. So I
yeah, it is, and, it is a little
and you
difficult.
Learn a lot.
And especially because many of the times Guy and I aren't even in the same location ourselves. So we have, we had a guest like yourself, and then there's Guy in his location, and I'm in my location, and then there's somebody in the studio, running all of this. So we've learned a lot. Let's just put it that way.
So have we. We will continue to do that. Actually, I want to make sure that your listeners knew that we're back home in California at this moment, and selling our house, as I've said, and living in our motorhome. We intend to travel the rest of all across the North American continent. So I am always looking for folks who'd be willing to help us find places we can park our motorhome, get some water, plug into electricity, and folks who know sort of some interesting things happening in their community.
Right.
The great news is we land in a town and get to know one or two people, and they say, do you know about such and such? They're doing this interesting experiment over here. And it's like, no, never heard of that, and it's something that I didn't know anybody was doing.
Right.
So I just would love to have people send me an email and let's make contact.
Absolutely. You're listening to Janaea Donaldson from Peak Moment Television on Nature Bats Last and the Progressive Radio Network. If you'd like to call in and ask a question of any of us, it's 888-874-4888. That's toll free, 888-874-4888.
Go ahead, Mike. Janaea just mentioned that she is interested in hearing from people who want to have a conversation and maybe even willing to host her for a bit. You can contact Janaea at peakmoment.tv. There's a little contact button up there in the upper right. So if you're so inclined, jump on it.
And Janaea is spelled Janaia at peakmoment.tv. Thank you.
Absolutely.
You know, your question, Guy and Mike, about interviews reminds me that I have a couple of pet questions I don't ask everyone, but I do, but they're always there in the background. I ask people where the challenges lie, because I think listeners want to hear what has been challenging to you. And they also want to know, conversely, what inspires you? And I think those two questions can open up worlds.
Right. Absolutely. And I think for my personal experience, and you mentioned this earlier about having someone, I don't know if you use the word adopt, but younger folks kind of bringing you in and you sharing their knowledge base with them, you know, being kind of the elder in the situation. And that's really what my wife and I think have done. And what Guy and his wife have provided us is a mentorship. And we have some other folks that we've lived with across really the globe who have really taken us in and shown us the ropes, where I find that what's happening out there, and even in people that live lives that are off-grid and rural, is they find themselves on an island and they're overwhelmed and there's not a lot of community going on because they've kind of bitten this off and they're trying to chew it all on their own. And I would like to see more people that are doing what the three of us are doing pair up and, you know, spend some time on one another's properties and learning from one another, especially if you're semi-nomadic like you seem to be and my wife and I are. I think it's just a great way to keep your energy going as well.
That's a great thought, Mike. I like it. I think that you're right. For those of us in rural areas, we tend to be more isolated, which, of course, is more demanding on the relationship. Because your community is just your partner or whoever few are in your household. Sometimes we find ourselves being something like a transient community with people, temporary community with the people we visit. For some, it gives them a chance to talk about things that they can't comfortably talk about with other friends. For some, it's just an extra set of hands to help out in the garden or the farm. So maybe you and we and others will have a role of just sort of being the itinerant, itinerant extra community and extra hand. Certainly,
yeah, I think that's really what we've been doing the last 4 years, and just the people we've met, it has changed our lives. I mean, it's literally taken us to places that and ideas and thoughts and feelings that we never thought, you know, even knew existed in some level. So,
hey, Mike, can we do a Peak Moment show with you about that when we come down your way?
Oh, absolutely. I would
love to be on
your show. I'd be honored.
I'd love to do one with you guys.
Yeah, it'd be, that'd be fun,
that,
a lot of fun.
I've known that for years. I've known for years, since you first contacted me, that I would love to do a show with you guys. So we will.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Janaea, I just had this brilliant question come to my mind. What what inspires you? Oh, I heard that question from you. What and who inspires you?
I think the first thing that inspires me most is the natural world, just being able to be and be connected to the natural world. I think that's my healing and the reminder that I am connected with all of that. I am inspired by people who get a whiff of doing something that makes a difference for the natural world, particularly, and that includes you. You know, because your heart is with the bigger cycle. I'm inspired by people who are having the courage to follow their heart, and I'm inspired by folks like Carolyn Baker, who's willing to ferret out and filter information so that I don't have to. Inspires me. So I think that I'm inspired by people who will ride the edge, because the edge is where there's energy. You know, the edge of a wave or the edge of the between a meadow and a forest, there's extra energy there. And I'm inspired by the edge riders who take risks. And I think I'm inspired by everyone who's willing to let their heart break, because they also love so much.
Wow. Well, in our last couple minutes here, what is coming up for you and Robin and the show?
We're continuing to produce shows that we videoed in our last trip up in the Pacific Northwest. We probably have another 3/4 of a year or even a whole year's worth of shows in the can to produce. We are, the next few weeks, we will complete moving everything out of the house and the garage. And those of you who've been on a homestead, a self-sufficient homestead, know that you save everything. You know, you don't know when you have a plumbing repair and you need that bit of wire or that piece of metal or that bit of wood. So it's kind of a challenge. We are moving things into a shipping container up by where our motorhome is. So that's the immediate future. And I think the winter will probably be here, downsizing more fully and producing the other shows. And then we'll be back on the road. My hope will be to be down in the Southwest for the following winter. But, you know, we're open to see what where the universe points us. So those are my immediate plans. Actually looking forward to a little bit more downtime. Being on the road can be quite intense.
Yeah.
Because you're learning in every moment. Every moment you have to be awake and alert. You know, a road you don't know, just finding directions, driving a motorhome through a city is not easy. And even just relating to new people, it's all new. It takes a lot of energy. So I'm looking forward to a little bit quieter winter. We'll see if it happens.
Right.
I've been looking forward to one of those for several years now.
Do you think it's going to happen, Guy?
It would surprise me, but I've been surprised before. So.
Okay, right. Okay.
It could happen. Thank you. Thank you very much, Janaea Donaldson from Peak Moment TV.
And thank you both. It's been a joy.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yes. You're with Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. That was Janaea Donaldson from peakmoment.tv. You can find all kinds of information, blogs, television shows, and so forth at peakmoment.tv. Mike, you got a Doomer of the Week for us?
We do. We have a Doomer of the Week, and the Doomer of the Week this week is Deborah Edwards. And she shared the following quote from the documentary Human in the Near-Term Human Extinction Love Group. And the quote goes, "We don't share our things anymore. It kills us as human beings, as a society, as a race. I'm talking about the human race. But we deny other people shelter. We deny other people food. We deny other people survival purely because of money. And Deborah Edwards, thank you. She is our Doomer of the Week. Guy, you got some climate news for us?
Yes. I love that we do the Doomer of the Week right before this, because then I sound like I'm positively Pollyanna. Large, first of all, I have something from July 28th, which goes back a ways. Some of this stuff takes a while to catch up to me, or maybe I take a while to catch up to it. This is from a paper published in the July 28th, 2015 issue of Geophysical Research Letters. Large bodies of water beneath deserts could profoundly worsen the climate change situation. It sounds paradoxical, and it sort of is. There's a large carbon sink or carbon pool beneath the Tarim Basin in Xinjiang, China. The hidden pool of water stores, quote, more carbon than all the plants on the planet put together. While more water may sound like a good thing, research believes that if this carbon were to escape into the atmosphere, we would be in serious, serious trouble. End quote from an interview with the author. Specifically, the senior author explained in an interview that, quote, it's like a can of Coke. If it is opened, all the greenhouse gas will escape into the atmosphere. So somebody tapping into that enormous aquifer could cause a tremendous release of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, and that would be incredibly serious for the climate change situation.
To say the least.
Yeah. Or to quote, serious, serious trouble. That's two seriouses.
Whoa.
Yeah, I've added this information to feedback number 28, which describes the important role of water bodies beneath deserts in the global carbon cycle. And I thought at that point, with feedback number 28, which describes the important role of water bodies beneath deserts, I thought that we can't have anything more, right? I mean,
right.
Huge water bodies in the, what else could there possibly be? Yeah, those are the good old days. From the September 7th, 2015 issue of the Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society comes a paper by Natalia Shakova and Igor Samelatov, along with 15 colleagues. We've been waiting for 2 years to hear from them. The abstract of this paper includes the following. Sustained release of methane, or CH4, to the atmosphere from thawing Arctic permafrost may be a positive and significant feedback to climate warming. Atmospheric venting of CH4 from the East Siberian Arctic Shelf was recently reported to be on par with flux from the Arctic tundra. However, the future scale of these releases remains unclear. Here, based on results of our latest observations, we show that CH4 emissions from this shelf are likely to be determined by the state of subsea permafrost degradation. We observe CH4 emissions from two previously understudied areas of the East Siberian Arctic Shelf. The outer shelf, where subsea permafrost is predicted to be discontinuous or mostly degraded due to long submergence by seawater, and the near shore area, where deep and open calyx presumably form due to a combined heating effects of seawater, river runoff, geothermal flux, and pre-existing thermal karst. CH4 emissions from these areas emerge from largely thawed sediments by a strong flare-like ebullition, producing fluxes that are orders of magnitude greater than fluxes observed in background areas underlain by largely frozen sediments. So that's really important to point out that these fluxes are orders of magnitude greater than fluxes observed in background areas. So that suggests that this is something that is beyond, quote, normal or long-term release. I should also point out this information comes from field research. It contrasts sharply with the notion promoted by modelers that methane release is a problem for the distant future, not for today. It's already underway, contrary to statements from Gavin Schmidt, David Archer, and other modelers. A further example of interactions among self-reinforcing feedback loops is provided in the September 10th, 2015 issue of Geophysical Research Letters, the title for which reveals the interaction, quote, rising methane emissions from northern wetlands associated with sea ice decline, end quote. So methane release drives the decline of sea ice in the Arctic Ocean, and the decline of sea ice contributes to the release of methane. So these are self-reinforcing feedback loops that feed among each other as well as within themselves. The final nail in the coffin of the so-called pause in planetary warming comes from an article in the September 17th, 2015 online issue of Climatic Change, which is strongly titled, quote, Debunking the Climate Hiatus. So that's now two or three papers pointing out that the hiatus, the pause, pointed out by the deniers of abrupt climate change, actually never happened. And an important paper from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences contributes a self-reinforcing feedback loop, the first one we've talked about for a while here. Biological soil crusts, sometimes called biocrusts, are communities of mosses, lichens, cyanobacteria, and heterotrophs lying at the soil surface. When I was conducting field research in southeastern Arizona for many years, we'd go out in the field and we would purposely not step on the soil crusts, preferring instead to step on the herbaceous plants that were there because the crusts are far more fragile than the plants themselves. So they're fundamental components of dry lands worldwide, these crusts, and destruction of the biocrusts dramatically alters biogeochemical cycles, hydrology, surface energy balance, vegetation cover, and so on. Although there's been a long-standing concern over impacts of physical disturbances on biocrusts, like trampling by livestock and damage from vehicles, there is increasing concern over the potential for climate change to alter biocrust community structure. So as reported in the September 24th, 2015 online edition of Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and yes, I know that's still 2 days from now, so I saw an early release, climate change exacerbates the degradation of biocrusts, thus triggering a self-reinforcing feedback loop. It's number 55 of the irreversible variety, thus bringing the total number of so-called positive feedbacks to 58.
Well, so I think Donald Trump's wall could fix all this, guy.
Well, I hope so.
It's going to be a great wall. Everything's going to be fine.
And if it's not, you're fired.
You're fired. Right on. So, well, thanks for the climate update, guy. And it's plenty to digest. So you can find all of that on his blog, guymcpherson.com. And that wraps it up for this week. Make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last, and the Progressive Radio Network, or join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bats Last on prn.fm. And feel free to post questions you'd like us to address on the show. And again, follow Guy's blog for future updates, essays, and speaking tours, guymcpherson.com. And we'll see you on the radio next Tuesday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll interview glacier researcher and author M. Jackson. And if you missed the show, make sure to find us in the archives at prn.fm and rate us on iTunes. Thanks again to Janaya Donaldson for her work and her show, and to Robin as well, and to Afrizin for his music. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end,
nature bats last.